Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the roll.
The roll shows 24 members present.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, Representatives Freeman and Rogers are excused from the call today.
Will the members please rise for the invocation by Representative Terry Martin?
Chaplain Terry Martin. Thank you. Spirit of wisdom and understanding, enlighten our minds to perceive the mysteries of the universe in relation to eternity. Spirit of right judgment and courage, guide us and make us firm in our decisions to follow Jesus' way of life and love. Spirit of knowledge and reverence, help us to see the lasting value of justice and mercy in our everyday dealings with one another. May we respect life as we work to solve the problems of family and state, economy and ecology. Spirit of God, spark our faith, hope, and love into new action this day. Fill our lives with wonder and awe in your presence, which penetrates all creation. Amen.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the prayer will be spread on the journal. We do have a quorum, so the next order of business will be certification of the journal.
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the journals, with one correction on page 1512 on the journal for the 102nd day. Under House Bill, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 849 rules, place a period after "and so" House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 849 rules fail to advance to third. Delete the rest of the sentence and insert. In accordance with Article 2, Section 14 of the Alaska Constitution, since the bill was considered past midnight and was actually in second reading on Friday, April 23rd, House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 849 rules was returned to rules for placement on the calendar for Saturday, April 24th, in third reading. With this correction, I certify to the journals for the 102nd and 103rd legislative days.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to House.
Hundred and second and 103rd, Representative Halford. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings us to introduction of guests, or the guests for introduction. Representative Martin.
Yes, sir, I'd like to have this opportunity to introduce two special friends I've met just briefly, and we've all seen them around the committee hearings and hallways. Sandy Sanderson and Louise Rood, both are from Anchorage, sir.
Are there other guests for introduction? Are there messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
No messages.
Other communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of bills?
No, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Representative Brown. House please stand at ease. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Upon a motion to recess, there'll be a Democratic caucus in the Butterfield room.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, upon a motion to recess, there will be a majority coalition caucus in the Speaker's chambers.
I think in order to, how many people do we have missing today? We have Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess to call the chair.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess to the call of the chair. Before the recess, we were to the consideration of the daily calendar. I need to get a quorum call. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the roll.
The roll shows 29 members present.
Will the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 42, CNRA, amended, entitled An Act Relating to the Village Safe Water Program and Providing for an Effective Date. Finance Committee, first, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, had Senate Bill, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42, amended under consideration. The committee recommended due pass. The due pass was signed by Grusendorf Chairman, concurred in by Vasca, Bilesma, Randolph, and O'Connell. Finance Committee had Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42, CNRA, amended under consideration. The committee recommended replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42, Finance, entitled An Act Providing for the Issuance of General Obligation Bonds in the Amount of $60 million for the purpose of paying the cost of village and urban water, sewer, and solid waste facilities construction and providing for an effective date. The House Committee Substitute is before us.
Did you read the committee report?
Yes, I did, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent House Finance Committee Substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House Finance Committee Substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Are there amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Before we can make a motion to advance from second to third, I need to establish a quorum again to be sure we have 30 people present. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
The roll shows 33 members present.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Finance Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I think that most people recognize what's going on here. There's, in my opinion, you have no intention of presenting this bond package as a credible package of bonds that you wish to place before the voters of Alaska. The entire package that was put together, admittedly by a member who isn't on the floor at the moment, in haste, without much consultation, without really the consideration that was necessary, and the Finance Committee, it was I raised the point that it was clear that it wasn't the intention of this body to present these as a final package, and that was generally admitted to. So I don't really believe that any of these bond issues are worth really much time or trouble. I don't think that they're being taken seriously by you, and I'm certainly not taking them seriously either.
Representative Brown?
Revert to introduction of guests, please.
Without objection, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I have a couple of constituents and their daughter who currently, and one of the members of the family who's currently a Junoite. I served on the board of directors of the Tundra Times with Dorothy Perdue of Fairbanks for quite an extended period, working with Howard Rock and with her daughters Mona from Fairbanks and Karen, whom we all know from Juneau, who works for the Lieutenant Governor's Office.
Is there further debate? Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On this bond proposition here, It looks like Anchorage is going to get $48 million, which I think is great. Unfortunately, as I understand this process, this measure would have to be voted on by all people of the voters of the state of Alaska. And if that were the case, in looking at this, I think that you will have other areas of the state that will not get any money out of this, and I doubt very much if they'd go for it, unless they're all very devoted and dedicated people and want Anchorage to get all the $48 million that we have on this measure. I oppose the advancement.
Are you ready, Representative Adams?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support this piece of legislation here. We had considerable hearings on this. There's two bills in the legislature that went by us through finance. One was by the junior representative from Juneau for $16 million. I also had a water sewer that went through committee of $25 million, and we've tried to basically with this go through the needs of water sewer through the state and place the package before you. So I do support this particular bond issue.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was a question I was going to ask of the finance chairman. He's correct. House Bill number 304 did pass out of the House Finance Committee this year and was passed by this body. And what it does is it increases the amount that the Department of Environmental Conservation might grant to a municipality from 50% of the eligible cost to 75%. However, that fund is created in 4603030. This bill that we have before us does not put any money into that fund. The bill that passed out of finance several weeks ago was only an authorization bill, enabling legislation, did not appropriate any money with it. So what this bill, the bond issue we have before us does, it puts all the money into the Village Safe Water Act, which I don't have any problem with that program. It's a very needed program. And you know, many of these villages do need water and sewer systems. But it puts nothing into the fund that municipalities can benefit from, such as Fairbanks, such as Juneau, such as Ketchikan, such as any of the other municipalities. That bond fund, or that fund for water and sewer projects, is at zero at this time, and it was indicated by the department when they testified in Finance Committee that they needed at least $20 million just for projects that were getting ready to go. So I appreciate that bill being passed out because it increased the amount of state money a municipality could receive. However, this bill, Senate Bill 42, doesn't provide any funds for that, for those projects. Provides funds only for those projects listed in this bill, which are the rural communities, which, assuming those are correct amounts, I would support because the rural communities do need that, and then provides $48 million for Anchorage and $1 million for Wasilla, but forgets about all the rest of the state. And I thought I heard the finance chairman say that the bill that passed out had $16 million with it. It didn't. They identified that as a need. $16 to $20 million, but there was no appropriation passed out, and I thought it would be included in this bond bill, and it's not. So I'm wondering if perhaps the chairman could respond to that question.
Representative Adams.
Yes, what we've done is take another bill that had $25 million in it and placed it through the various programs that you see here, the villages, and as far as that. For the regional housing that is still in rules for that particular bill.
Representative Duncan?
Well, then we're talking about two different bills, and I misunderstood him. If he's talking about the $16 million for water and sewer for the regional housing authority houses that are federal funded houses, that's a different program altogether. That is one program that they've moved out of Finance Committee also and provides water and sewer hookup for those houses that the federal government are providing 90% of the funds for. But the other question I had was that there are more water and sewer needs in this state than is just reflected in this bond bill. And I'm wondering how carefully they looked at that. There is another fund besides the Village Safe Water Fund. There's another fund where municipalities such as Ketchikan and Rango and Petersburg and Juneau and Fairbanks and other municipalities and Kodiak, where they can participate. And they can receive up to 75% of the cost from that fund. The testimony in the Finance Committee when the Finance Committee was working on water and sewer issues was that fund is down to zero. There's no money available. They need about $20 million to replenish that fund. This bill does not do it. This bill takes care of those rural communities, which I don't have a quarrel with. If those are correct amounts, the rural communities need the money. There's no doubt about it. They need water and sewer systems, and I support that. It also takes care of Anchorage in the amount of $48 million and Wasilla for $1 million, but it forgets about everybody else. And there's no money available for Juneau to apply or for Ketchikan to apply or for Fairbanks to apply for matching money to build their water and sewer system. And my question is that going to be addressed? Is this the honest-to-goodness bond package that is being proposed to be put on the ballot? If it is, then I think there's serious problems and serious deficiencies in it.
Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if the member from Juneau is correct, then there's nothing in this bond package for the three cities that would determine the vote outcome on any bond issue. And, of course, our experience, whether it's good or bad, our experience is that unless you provide something for everybody in a general support nature bond issue, you have a great amount of difficulty getting it passed at the time of the general election. Is this an oversight, or is this really just intended to be a charade and it's intended to fail at the ballot box?
Is there further debate? Representative Zaroff?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I normally don't have any particular problems with, or problem at all with bonds, and normally if they're done correctly. And looking at these three packages, I think my calendar here, or the calendar I have before me, is incomplete. I don't know. Looking through the House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42 Finance, it goes on to page 2, and the final line on there says bond authorized in this, and then from there I go on to the Committee Substitute, the CRA amended. So either... And I hope that this is the case, that you are also hiding from the legislature as you are hiding from the public the information that you're presenting forward, either that or this is just the pure sham there that this represents. It's absolutely nothing. And when you look through these various projects and you try to think of some sort of an equitable distribution there throughout the state to get support for this, I don't see absolutely anything here. I can understand the capital budget there and the egos there that want to get to the minorities there and not participating and so on, that I could understand that. But when you get to something like this, this is purely reflectant there upon the attitude of this particular coalition majority. Now, if we take a look, we've got approximately $150 million worth of bond issues here. For my particular district, I can come up with 0.7% of the entire package. This, Mr. Speaker, is a pure example of what happens when the public is not informed, when the legislature is not informed, and purely the motives of egos and individuals there that are out there with greedy little hands to pick up everything that they can is purely reflectant upon what we see before us. And what I have before me is not even complete. So I assume there that this is going to continue to happen. I mean, if this is something that we treat legislation in this body as final legislation that will be presented to the other body, which could conceivably be accepted, passed, continued on through the process, then presented to the people, Mr. Speaker, this is purely, purely bad legislation.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Finance Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 42 be advanced from second to third reading and placed on final passage? Seems to be some dispute between myself and the clerks here on where we are, but we have an advancement motion to third reading. Representative Duncan?
I call the House.
There is a call on the House.
Mr. Speaker?
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, while we're waiting the call, I'll place another motion, which a member, of course, may call the House on if they wish, but maybe we could debate it anyway. Mr. Speaker, at this time, I ask unanimous consent that this body stand in adjournment until 9 a.m. Monday morning.
There is objection.
Mr. Speaker, I place that motion with the 9 a.m. time zone specifically so that it could be debated. I realize it would not be appropriate to make a move like this without considerable debate. I'd like to make several suggestions, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make the suggestion, first of all, that any of us quit kidding ourselves that that we're going to have a sine die motion that counts any time within the next few days, much less tomorrow. I mean, you know, we can play this great game of let's pretend if we want to, and apparently some of us want to, but, you know, I don't even think we're kidding each other, much less ourselves, much less the public. Everybody knows we're not going to adjourn sine die for good tomorrow. So the next most sensible thing that we could do, Mr. Speaker, would be, in fact, is the most sensible thing, I should say, would be to do what the other body has already done and simply adjourn on a normal basis until Monday morning. Speaker, that would do two things. That will cut down the number of days that we will be in session by three. I'd like to suggest to the members of the coalition that if they go through this phony sine-die motion tomorrow, you're actually extending this legislature by 3 days, because there's going to be 3 days in which we're going to play like we're not in session, and everybody above a kindergarten level is going to know we're in session. But we won't be doing the people's work. Some of us perhaps will be traveling off someplace. Some of us will be catching up our sleep. Some of us will be perhaps doing some useful work. But the point is, we will not be here on the floor doing work that we could be doing and thereby cutting down the amount of time that it's going to take to really adjourn. Unless we adjourn in a just a normal basis to Monday, as opposed to going through a phony sine-die motion, whatever day we adjourn on for real, be it the 110th day or the 150th day or the 120th day, it'll be 3 days longer than it needed to be by the direct action of the coalition majority enforcing this phony three-day sine-die situation. That's another thing that I think the public is going to perceive, that for 3 days, at the time when we were playing like we were trying to adjourn, we weren't adjourning. So, Mr. Speaker, my point is that why don't we just do the normal thing and just adjourn until Monday, like the other body has done. That also gives us the advantage of having a calm day, in which the leadership of this House can get together quietly without the press of this phony sine-die adjournment. The leadership of this House can get together with the leadership of the other House. They can decide what the real differences are. An orderly procedure for starting the adjournment process, the real adjournment process, can take place. And at whatever date the real adjournment does take place, we'll know that it's the earliest possible date that it was possible. Our alternative, of course, is to go through with a phony sine die tonight, and everybody can blame everybody else. Your group can blame our group can blame your group, somebody else can blame the other bodies, maybe everybody wants to blame the governor's office. It doesn't matter who's to blame at this point of the game. The hard fact is that at this point, legislation that's necessary for a real adjournment is in a shambles. And it doesn't even matter whose fault it is. We couldn't adjourn right now if literally our lives depended on it. Absolutely, unquestionably, we couldn't. And everybody in this place really knows it. So why don't we do what I think the people of Alaska would appreciate us doing? And that is, take a good, you know, stiff drink of reality here. Adjourn until Monday. Have the leadership of both houses work over the Sunday. Agree on a plan. Come back together here Monday morning and proceed. And then, as I said, and I'll say it one more time just for emphasis, on whatever day we do adjourn, we will know that that really was the earliest possible real adjournment. Absent that, if we go through with this phoniness tomorrow, whatever day we do adjourn, everybody in the state is going to know, because they're not dumb, Mr. Speaker, is going to know that we were here at least 3 unnecessary days, because we were playing this phony 3-day sine die game. I realize, Mr. Speaker, that at this moment you're not going to vote yes on a motion that was made by a minority member. So therefore, I'm going at this moment to move to withdraw my amendment. I would like for you to think about it. I earnestly ask you to think about it during the intervening time while we're discussing the rest of these so-called bond packages, package bills. And then, however you want to do it, Mr. Speaker, I suggest that somebody from your coalition make that motion. If somebody from your coalition does not, of course, we will make the motion again, undoubtedly. But far better for somebody from your group to do it, because then, of course, you won't be bound by the procedures to vote against us. With that, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw my motion, at least for the time being.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A stiff drink of reality. It seems, I recall last year, we took something like 22 days to organize, about 165 days to shut this show down. I can't get very fractured over 3 days now.
Representative Randolph.
You know, highly inappropriate for a member to stand up, make a motion, debate it at length, and then withdraw the motion for the chance for an opposite point of view. Therefore, I objected. Mr. Speaker, I'm convinced, totally convinced, that if the other body would even start cooperating with us right this minute, that we could adjourn in the next 24 to 48 hours and have a far more responsible package and have dealt with the people's business in a heck of a lot more responsible way than we're going to if that does not happen. Mr. Speaker, I think we not only can, but I think we should do what we can do and go ahead and adjourn and mean it. There is absolutely no reason, and I'll submit to you that if that does not happen, and whenever we do finally adjourn with the cooperation of the other House and the Governor, we will have a far less desirable situation than we have if we go ahead with the plan we have now. Of course, that's all subjective, depending on what you want to try to get accomplished. My goal is not to put this state further in debt. My goal is not to have more and more pork barrel projects go out across the state. My goal is not to have more social programs crammed down the peoples of this state's throat. Those are my basic priorities, to have as little government as possible, as little effect on the people as possible. Now, folks who want to have more debt, more social programs, more pork barrel capital projects, obviously aren't satisfied with who we are at this point. But I certainly am satisfied and would like to see us, admittedly, you do need some cooperation on the other side. But I'm perfectly happy to go with what we can have in the next 24 to 48 hours, and I think the people will be far better served what they'll have if we don't achieve that goal.
Is the objection maintained to the...
It is.
Representative Cotton?
Mr. Speaker, the previous speaker referred to one of his goals is not to put the state further into debt. Well, he belongs to the caucus who proposed today's calendar that proposes that we go into debt, at least in 3 different measures. We didn't put that calendar together, Mr. Speaker, you did. Secondly, it might help in my decision on whether or not to vote for this amendment if the Speaker of the House or the Majority Leader or somebody in the leadership would describe what the plan of action is for the next couple of days. I think the public would like to know that as well, Mr. Speaker. So I would ask that someone describe what your plans are over the next day or two, I guess. I've heard a lot of rumors about what might happen, but I'd appreciate hearing an explanation of what the majority coalition's plans are for shutting this session down, and what's the plan for the next couple of days.
Representative Duncan,
would you like to reply first to Representative Cotton?
You have the floor, sir.
Okay, fine. Mr. Speaker, I objected to withdrawing the motion just because I think I want to respond to the Libertarian representative from Fairbanks. His statement was very clear that if we had a little cooperation in this body, out of the minority, he said, then we could pass everything we need to and we could adjourn within the next 24 hours. Mr. Speaker, we could give that cooperation if there was anything on the calendar or if there was anything responsible that had been placed before us that should be passed. But there isn't. Mr. Speaker, he's asking for cooperation to pass bond bills that are on the calendar today that don't make any sense, that were thrown together, that don't answer the basic needs of this state, that no one can defend the projects that are in there because they were just thrown together to have them on the calendar so you could go through the charade of trying to adjourn. And he wants us to cooperate in that? Mr. Speaker, it's ridiculous. He wants us to cooperate in passing bond bills that don't make any sense at all. He wants us to cooperate in passing a second operating budget. I mean, you passed one, now you want to pass two, and you want to adjourn within the next 24 hours, which means there's not going to be any resolving of the differences in your budget and the Senate budget. You're just going to pass everything over there and go home, and that's a responsible way to handle it. He wants us to cooperate in irresponsibility? Mr. Speaker, I can't believe that anyone would ask another elected official to do that very thing, to toss up their hands, to say, yes, we're irresponsible and we'll cooperate with you in making it more irresponsible. I can't believe it. He wants us to cooperate in putting this state into debt and overexpending. He said, you guys cooperate with us, we'll go home in 24 or 48 hours, and you know what we'll have? We'll have an overexpenditure again this year, just as we did last year. Cooperation and irresponsibility. Well, maybe that's the way his political party works, or the way your political party works, but I don't think that's the way my political party works. We're here to do a job, and to do it responsibly. We're not here to cooperate with you so you can irresponsibly pass two operating budgets, pass a set of bond issues that you don't even know what they do, appropriate more money than we have available for appropriation by at least $100 to $300 million, and if you don't correct the problem with the permanent fund that you're going to rob, if you don't fix it so you can rob it, you're going to overexpend by $1 billion, and he wants cooperation? Mr. Speaker, the most responsible thing we can do, that the minority can do for this state at this time, is not to cooperate in your irresponsibility. That's the most responsible action we can take, and by golly, we'll continue to take it until you straighten this mess out.
Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know if hallway information is necessarily the best in the world, but at least appears to me that several members of your caucus, who are in the leadership of your caucus, were proposing that we do precisely what is suggested in the motion by the senior member from Juneau. And it's interesting to have the senior libertarian from Fairbanks at least give us a sampling of some of the discussions that must have gone on in your caucus since we were last on this floor. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure there were others of you that were disagreeing with him because, of course, I think the libertarians have an agenda. They've been consistent. They've been out front about what they believe in. And, of course, for what he's always said he believes in, I suppose his statements are quite correct. But, Mr. Speaker, it may well be that whether or not the member from Juneau is allowed to withdraw his motion, that one of your members could make that motion. And all you need, if I count right, is between 6 to 8 votes, depending on who's on the floor, and we'll provide you with the rest, and then you might have a little bit of problem in your caucus, but at least you'll be addressing sanity, and you'll have the opportunity to continue the discussions that I know that the three of you have just been having downstairs with representatives of the other body. I think those discussions are very, very necessary. They are a lot more necessary than dealing with bonds bills that, as they are written now, simply are never going to pass the legislature. In the unlikely event that they do, they are never going to be approved by the voters.
Representative Gardner.
Speaker, some comments on the motion before us and the opinions of the senior libertarian member on the motion and where the session's going. I think that should remember senior representative from Ketchikan, who's not here at this time, his statements about the role of the majority and the minority, and it's pretty obvious our minority has 15 votes, doesn't have enough votes to make decisions on the floor of this House. Your caucus has the majority of the votes, that's why you're sitting in the chair, and you are, the quote, the leadership of this body. We can point out the errors that we see and the differences in the policies that we think should be effectuated for the state, but you have the leadership and the responsibility and the power to decide what goes on the calendar, what decisions this body makes. So we can point out the errors. We cannot share in the responsibility for the actions that are before us on the calendar and the results of those. I think it should be pretty obvious that we're not helping the state or to resolve adjournment by this calendar. These bond bills are not helping what the problem is. The problem is that there is no agreement between the House, the Senate, and the governor on what are the priorities of this session, what is supposed to be addressed before we leave, and what the time schedule to leave is. That has nothing to do with this calendar, and I think it's been pointed out that it is a waste of time to be working on this calendar when we don't have an agreement between the leadership of this body and the leadership of the other body and the governor. We have to realize that it is a bicameral system and that the leadership has to do that. And I think that in defense of the leadership of your caucus, they have been trying to do it. And I think that's where we get down to the real problem, is that your troops are going to have to realize that. The people in your caucus are going to have to realize that there is going to have to be an agreement between the House, Senate, and the governor, or nothing will ever get done in the session. No major legislation has passed and been sent to the governor. No major appropriation items have been addressed. We're on the 104th day, and it should be evident to everybody in your caucus that they're going to have to support their own leadership to get something done so there can be an adjournment. And I would suggest that the best thing to do is to think about taking some time to resolve the real problems. Taking time to consider this calendar isn't going to resolve the problem that your caucus won't support its leadership and they won't work out an agreement with the Senate and governor. Inevitably, that is the only way the session can adjourn and to agree something. And I think that the members of your caucus are going to have the political maturity to realize that that is the way it's always been done, and that's the way it's going to be done, and as long as we are living under the Constitution that the state of Alaska has. And I would suggest that they ought to think about how to adjourn the session rather than putting out calendars like this that are just causing unnecessary fights and will continue to cause unnecessary fights as long as calendars look like this.
Is the objection maintained to the motion by Representative Miller to withdraw his motion to adjourn until 9 a.m. Monday morning? Is the objection continued? Hearing none, the motion to adjourn is withdrawn. This brings us back to, I believe, the motion by Representative Halford, which was that House Finance Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 42 be advanced from second to third reading and placed on final passage. Are you ready for the question? I believe the call has been satisfied. Question is, shall House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 42 be advanced from second to third reading and placed on final passage. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The motion to advance from second to third reading has failed. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Bill number 205 by Senators Fahrenkamp, Bennett, Curtula, and Dankworth, entitled An Act Making a Special Appropriation to the Fairbanks North Star Borough for the Nordic Ski Club of Fairbanks and the Nordic Ski Club of Anchorage and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee had the Senate Bill number 205 under consideration. Committee recommended replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 205 by Finance, entitled An Act Providing for the Issuance of General Obligation Bonds in the amount of $43,049,200 for the purpose of paying the cost of construction of and improvements to airport, port, and other transportation facilities, and providing for an effective date.
This time I'm going to place a call of the House on Senate Bill 205. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House Finance Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Representative Malone.
Speaker, in addition to the objections that similar to those that were raised on the previous House Committee substitute to a Senate bill, Speaker, I raise the question as to whether this amendment, this proposed amendment, is germane to the bill at all. As I read it here, we started out with an appropriation, small appropriation for a ski club someplace, and now this has been turned into a transportation bond issue. Speaker, I do not think the question is germane, and I pose that question to the House.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I investigated that question with both Dyla Rule and some attorneys in Anchorage that are experts in on the bond authorizations, Wolforth and Flint, and everyone did agree that was perfectly proper and there was no violation and no problem with marketing the bonds. It was very important in the view of some that there be a two-stage motion that it wouldn't be appropriate under our germaneness rules and also under single subject to go from a single appropriation to a transportation bond. But it is allowable, of course, to amend any appropriation bill since the single subject rule does not apply to appropriation bills. So we did amend the original appropriation to a multiple appropriation bill of the same things that have now been turned into a transportation bond. It is allowable to go from an appropriation to a bond issue, and so because of that two-stage process, there's no violation according to the attorneys that we talked to.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I didn't raise the question of legality or single subject rule. I raised the question of germaneness. Mr. Speaker, I don't care how many steps you go through. Appropriation started out as a little appropriation to apparently assist some civic group in Fairbanks, and now it's turned into a transportation bond issue. Mr. Speaker, the amendment simply does not relate to the original bill. It's not germane to it. In defense of my question or an argument for it, I'd like to point out that there's reason for raising this type of question. If anybody can come out with a an amendment totally revising not only the purpose but the nature of legislation, then I think that the public process of debate on public issues is greatly in jeopardy. And I would urge the House to exercise a little common sense and recognize that the amendment is not germane to the bill.
Representative Brown.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Well, The finance chairman said, the former finance chairman said that the sequence was all right because of advice given by bond counsel. He made a reference, an oblique reference to our attorney, but I don't think he really addressed the question of germaneness. He only addressed the question of single subject on the one hand and whether or not this would pass muster with bond counsel in the event there were a question of the legality of this with the bonds could be sold. But that's different, Mr. Speaker, from the question of germaneness. Germaneness is determined by our rules and our procedures, and he hasn't addressed that question. I think it's a serious question. I urge that the members vote that the matter is proposed by the amendment is not germane.
Representative Malone.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. To put the question in perspective, I would like to ask, it's a rhetorical question, admittedly, but to think about, how is a $35,000 appropriation for to help out a civic group or community group in Fairbanks germane to Ketchikan runway improvements and equipment, for example, or to the St. Paul Boat Harbor? It's not germane to that question. I think that this bill has been stretched beyond all limits. Mr. Speaker, I think that the legislature has a responsibility to follow some common sense in picking titles to amend, and I think this goes completely beyond the pale. The question is obviously not germane.
Representative Brown?
Speaker, under Section 402 of Masons, under 2 and 3, although it on one shows that there's a relation to the single subject rule, but of course we know from previous discussions that that's not quite the same thing. On page 281 of the most recent edition, if that's what you have, it says, to determine whether an amendment is germane, the question to be answered is whether the question is relevant, appropriate, and a natural and logical sequence to the subject matter of the original proposal. And at 3 it says, to be germane, the amendment is required only to be relate to the same subject, and so forth. Mr. Speaker, based on the comments of the senior member from Kenai, it's quite clear that the amendment is not germane, and therefore the members should vote that it is not germane.
Referring to Section 402.8 reads, whether a proposed amendment is consistent with the measure, motion, or question proposed to be amended is a question to be decided by the body and not by the presiding officer. So the question for the body, are you ready for the question? Question is the amendment, which would be the Finance Committee substitute, House Finance Committee substitute, germane? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The House has decided that the amendment is germane. We have before us a motion to accept the House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205 in lieu of the original bill. There was objection. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205 be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The House Finance Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Are there amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Objection. There is objection. Are you ready for the question? Representative Duncan.
Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just one question on this bill. This bill, or the proposed committee substitute of Senate Bill 205, is probably a better example than the first bill of how not to put bond issues together if you really want to get projects taken care of. And I think those members of your caucus who worked on this understand the political realities of bond issues just as much as anyone else does. Many needed projects here. The rural air improvements, the runway lighting, probably the harbors and ports, they're needed. They're not all inclusive. You haven't included all of them, but they're needed. But the biggest example of how to put together a bond issue and head it for defeat is here. Mr. Speaker, there's only one project in Southeast Alaska included here. Ketchikan Runway Improvements and Equipment. It's a good project. It's needed. There's also some other good projects needed in Southeast Alaska, but they're all left out. There's one project in Fairbanks, at least as far as I can find, the service area roads in Fairbanks, North Star Borough. I guess it's needed. But Mr. Speaker, the area of the state where 50% of the population lives, your hometown, unless I've missed something, and maybe I have, not included. There's nothing here for Anchorage. These things go on the ballot in November. The political reality is, if you want to get the votes for a bond issue, you put something in there for everybody. You know, I've worked on bond issues before. Other people have. Anchorage is not here. 50% of the population is left out completely. In addition to that, Juneau is left out. The other southeast communities are left out. Ketchikan's in for $1.5 million. That might take care of them. And Fairbanks is in for $3 million. Maybe they'll be happy with that. Mr. Speaker, you can't be serious about proposing a bond issue and saying this is the final one, this is what's going to go on the ballot, when you've left out probably 70% of the state population. I don't know who worked on this. I got an idea who worked on it. I thought he knew better. I thought the finance chairman or the former finance chairman, whatever he is, I thought he knew how to put together bond issues.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205 be advanced from second to third reading and placed on final passage? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The motion to move the House Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205 from second to third reading has failed to pass the House. Representative Gardner?
Speaker, could we have an at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Will the clerk please read the next bill on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 365 by the Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to Special Education and Providing for an Effective Date. The Health Education Social Service referral was waived. The Finance Committee had committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 under consideration, recommended replaced with House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 by the Finance Committee entitled An Act Providing for the Issuance of General Obligation Bonds in the amount of $45 million for the purpose of paying the cost of University of Alaska and School District and Educational Center construction and improvement projects, and providing for an effective date.
This time I'm going to place a call of the House on Senate Bill 365. Meanwhile, we can entertain a motion by the majority leader to accept the committee substitute in lieu of the original bill, and then if there is objection, we can debate that.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House Finance Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Objection. There is objection. Is there debate?
Representative Duncan.
Representative Nees, please.
Before we stand at ease, would the Sergeant of Arms please locate Representative Gardner, Representative Moss, and Representative Anderson. House, please stand at ease. Okay. Order.
I call that. Excuse me. Is the money there or not?
Well, we got it.
Hey, it's Ward Douglas. I'm just trying to tell you. Seriously, it's perfect. Last night was beautiful. Sailed into midnight.
We have before us the question of, shall the House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Are you ready to vote? Question is, shall House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 be adopted in lieu of the original bill? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Are there amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 365 be advanced from second to third reading and placed on final passage? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 25 yeas, 13 nays.
The motion to advance from second to third reading has failed to pass the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 737 by the Finance Committee entitled An Act Making a Special Appropriation to Combat the Causes and Effects of Birth Defects, Making a Special Appropriation to the Federal Budget Impact Fund, and Providing for an Effective Date.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737 finances before us in third reading. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737 finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 24 yeas, 14 nays.
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737 Finance has passed the House. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the effective date clauses.
There is objection. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt the effective date clauses for House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737 Finance?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, I was just short at ease, please. I don't have the bill in my packet, and I wanted to take another look at those effective date clauses.
The House, please stand at ease. Ask members if they would be kind enough to save their bill packets. Hopefully you did, because that's where you should find your information for the next four bills in that bill packet. If anyone's having a problem, they would stand up and be recognized. We'll try to find you a copy if you can't relocate it. Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I had objected to the effective date on this, but I think I'll go with it. I believe that'll hook the bill later anyway.
There was objection to the motion to adopt the effective date clauses. Are you ready for the question? Question is...
Mr. Speaker, I just withdrew my objection. I think I was the only one.
I believe you were not. Representative Cotton objected. Yeah. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt the effective date clauses for the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737 Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 38 yeas, no nays.
The House has adopted the effective date clauses. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we rescind our action adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 737.
There is objection. The motion, Representative Brown, that rescinding motion is out of order when it can be reached, I believe, by reconsideration. It is available for reconsideration for tomorrow's calendar. You could give notice of reconsideration, and tomorrow I think a rescinding motion would be in order.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes, sir.
Well, tomorrow a rescinding motion wouldn't be necessary because the bill would be for us as though it hadn't been voted on. Mr. Speaker, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 737.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Brown for Senate Bill 737. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Committee Substitute for Senate, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 744. By Finance, entitled An Act Appropriating for Operating Expenses of State Government, Making and Amending Appropriations, and Providing for an Effective Date.
This time I'm going to place a call of the House on Senate Bill 744. Ask the House to stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. During the ease, there was an amendment placed on the clerk's desk. Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask that we go from third to second reading for an amendment.
There is objection. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
This is amendment number 3 by Representative Adams. Delete page 1, lines 6 through 8, and insert the following in its place.
I believe this has been reproduced, and every member should have a copy of this amendment on their desk. Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I may explain the amendment, the first section is just a title change. It's an act appropriation for the operating expense of a state government, making amendments and repealing various appropriations and providing for an effective date.
Section 20 is a repealer there, just only in the language that we had passed last year where we stated we're going to put 1.4 into the permanent fund and 400 million the following year. Due to the fact that the revenue fluctuations are changes, that as the money is available, we'll still be able to put up to 1.8 into the permanent fund. Sections 21 and 22 is just language that was on page 1 of 7. It's the risk management. And what I've done as far as page 9, lines 1 through 61, is deleted the text, and then I've inserted the additions that we made to House Bill number 666. These are all the additions you have seen on these particular pages in the operating budgets. And I just wanted to make it clear that there was some people in the body had some concerns about sending two budgets over to the Senate. So what we're only doing is sending over the additions to the budget. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, just an inquiry. On the section where it says Section 20, Section 68, Chapter 92, SLA 1981 is repealed, the finance chairman identified that this was the permanent fund, $1.8 million that we passed last year. What happens to the money that has already gone into that? Is that going to be pulled out of the permanent fund as a result of this? Or just what is the status of that?
The money
Representative
that
Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry. The money that we have placed in the permanent fund is $800 million. That stays in the permanent fund. But the $1 billion that has not been placed in the permanent fund, as the revenues go higher and when we can afford it, we'll place that $1 billion into the permanent fund. The Senate has put a percentage clause into that. I'm just stating that as the revenues go up and when we can afford it, that we'll place the $1 billion into the permanent fund appropriation.
Representative.
Mr. Speaker, could we have just a brief at ease while I take a look at that SLA 92?
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? We're under debate on a motion to return to second reading for the purpose of adopting a specific amendment, amendment number 3. Is there further debate? Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, on this amendment, in the great shell game here, this might make some tactical wise sense to, instead of giving them two budgets, you just give them the add-ons. But I don't know that it gets us anywhere in terms of adjournment and really working out the problems. This is sort of the trickiest way I've ever seen to have a free conference committee. but I'm afraid that nobody buys it, so we're back to square one, and it sort of reminds me of the British and the Argentinians and what's going on. I don't know. I don't think this resolves anything. Maybe there has Ronald Reagan and his troops will have to come in and negotiate a compromise here, but I don't think this is going to really get anywhere. It just seems to be an escalation of the conflicts between the two bodies. It may extricate the House from having two budgets sitting on the governor's desk, and he can't play his games. I don't think that idea or threat by the administration to do that was very wise in the first place. It's sort of a move, counter move, and this is now another counter move, but I think it doesn't really get us somewhere. I do have one question though about the numbers here. As I understood the budget that was proposed before us, the original budget we passed was $1,595,000,000. Then the one that was this one that's before us now was $1,641,000,000, up $46 million. But back here on the back page where the summary, it says general fund is a $48 million increase, and I thought it was only 46. So either the 1641 was not correct, or there's a couple million in here that wasn't in the other ones. I'm just wondering where I'm going wrong on the math here, or if this is a little bit different than what was in the budget before us. It should only be 46 million, but it says general fund 48 million.
Speaker, Representative Adams.
Thank you. The speaker from Ketchikan is correct. It should be 46.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there were comments earlier here about the role of the minority and the responsibilities of the majority and all that, and I guess it's partly working in that we stood here and criticized the House Bill 666 and commented that there are things needed, and then yesterday, sure enough, you came in with a new budget, and many of the things that we mentioned were included in that budget, although they weren't included in the other one. Yesterday we said, but you're double budgeting, and that's not going to work because you're giving a blank check to the Senate and the third floor. So we went ahead and the next day came out with an amendment to take care of that problem. And we don't mind help doing your work for you, but you'd think that you would work out a plan of your own with regard to how you're going to write the budget and close down the session. And this really is yet another charade, just like the other bills on today's calendar. When you do reach an agreement, I doubt, or I would predict, that the agreement will not involve this bill or this amendment, even though the amendment does address the double budgeting dilemma that I discussed yesterday. And I think I'll even vote to go back to second reading, because I don't want to, I don't want the House, as long as I'm a member of the House, to provide that kind of a blank check. But on the other hand, I still don't see any reason at the final juncture to vote for this second phony budget. I'm wondering when the third attempt at a budget is going to come along, possibly on Wednesday and Thursday when we reconvene.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thought this new proposal is a good compromise, perhaps on your point of view, but I still see that the intent language regarding the use of funds on the domestic violence program still excludes the use of money for Juneau Women's Center, Anchorage Resource Center, Valley Resource Center, and the emerging, men emerging now, and I still oppose the fact that you have that intent in your proposal.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 744 Finance be returned from third to second reading for the purpose of adopting a specific amendment, Amendment Number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 30 yeas, 8 nays.
The motion to return to second reading has passed the House. Representative Adams, please move the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Is there objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 3? There is objection. Are you ready for the question? Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I do object very strongly to Section 20 of the bill and what its intent is. And I think the bottom line of Section 20 is an admission of failure of this House to correctly spend state money and to correctly balance the budget of the state and to raise the revenues that are proper. The effect of this amendment will be, of course, to make sure that the $1 billion that was appropriated last year that was supposed to go to the permanent fund is spent on operating capital expenditures and loans. And I think that that's a big mistake. I think the legislature should have given more serious attention to that issue. There should have been public hearings to see how the people of this state felt about the priority of spending that money on this budget bill that's before us and the capital budget that's before us, and the other appropriation bills are for us, instead of letting it go in the permanent fund, like last year's legislature made the decision to go. I know I've received a lot of mail just because people have received read stories in the mail saying, what's going on down there? Why is the legislature in a spending frenzy? And why can't they leave this money in the permanent fund where it belongs? You know, I think the permanent fund grew out of a desire by legislators and citizens across the state to not make the same mistake that we made with the $900 million that the state had the blessing of flowing into its treasury in the late 60s. And I don't think the mistake was that we spent the money on what people perceived as the needs of the state. I think the mistake was that we spent every last cent of it. I think it only makes sense to take a portion of the money that is a one-shot deal and to set it aside so that there are some alternative uses and some ongoing benefits of it. In the last two legislatures, we had massive amounts of revenue relative to what we had before, and I think we did the proper thing to not spend every last cent of it. This year's legislature, we are spending every cent. We're not saving anything. In fact, now we're going back and trying to spend what we made a decision to save last year. I think that's a big mistake, and we're the same jokes that have been made about the legislatures that spent the $900 million are going to be made about this legislature, and whether you vote for or against us, the joke's going to apply to all of us. And I think that's sort of sad. There were a lot of alternatives that if we'd seriously looked at this question of using this $1 billion, we could have done. We could have spent less money in a lot of areas that are now on this calendar. We could have raised revenues through a lot of different ways. But we did not even bother to seriously address those questions, and now we've got this issue before us. And I think it's a real mistake and shows that we didn't have any overall financial plan in this legislature. And I really oppose Section 20 of this amendment.
Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, there's been some confusing discussion here. One member said that somehow the result will only be that the $1 billion will go in more slowly, or implied that. Another member seems to think the result effectively is that that won't happen or won't happen for a very long time. I know someone did send out to get Section 68, Chapter 92, SLA 81. Could someone tell me precisely what this section is that's being repealed?
Representative Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The section that's being repealed is a far better approach than the approach that's advocated by the other body and by the executive. In repealing that section, what you're doing is you're saying that the $1.8 billion non-lapsing appropriation remains. It remains with the initial language that was passed with, I believe it was House Bill 1 last year. All you're repealing is the provision that requires 1.4 to be put in FY82 and $400 million to be put in FY83. But the effect of the proposal that's advocated by the other body and the executive is to use a percentage, and in fact, based on what many of us think the revenues are going to be next year, you would find a slower and a more drawn out appropriation to reach the $1.8 billion. I think this is a far more responsible approach than that other approach.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, let's don't make any false promises to the people of Alaska as to what's going to happen on here. That's what we did last year. Apparently we promised the people we were going to put $1.8 billion of their money into the permanent fund. Hey, we're not. With the adoption of this new Section 20, we are reneging on that promise. Plain, unadulterated, right out front, saying no, we're breaking that promise. We're not going to put that money into the permanent fund. Now, maybe the revenues are such that we couldn't put all of the money that we originally promised. But the fact of the matter is, with this, we are not even trying to put any of the money in there. And then when we say, well, we really are, because now it can be put in by, you know, as the money becomes available, depending on who's on the third floor, another penny may not be put back in there for the next 80 years. We are flat reneging on our promise. And the practical result of that, it's bad enough that we're just doing it and breaking a promise to the people, but the practical result is that money that would otherwise go into the permanent fund and therefore be available through earnings to go into each member or each constituent's, each Alaskan's pocket is not going to happen. Let's be real upfront about this. We're not failing to put money into the permanent fund. We are failing to put money into the pockets of the people to whom all this money really belongs, the people of Alaska. There's a formula in the permanent fund dividend process that says a portion of the earnings of the permanent fund go to the people in dollars, in cash, in that green stuff that spends. And by not putting money into the permanent fund that we previously promised we would, we're reneging on our promise to put money into the pockets of the people of Alaska. Their money, it belongs to them. Let's emphasize that over and over again. It's their money, it belongs to them. And by the terms of the permanent fund legislation, the earnings were to go directly to those people in the form of cash, spendable cash. And by reneging on that promise to put the money into the permanent fund that we said last year we would do, we are cutting down on the number of dollars that would otherwise go to the people of the state of Alaska. Somebody can say, well, they think the Supreme Court's going to rule against us anyway, so it doesn't matter. I say, number one, there's an excellent chance that we will win that court case. We certainly won it in our own Supreme Court. Even if it didn't, I don't think there's anybody in this body that doesn't think we'll find other ways to redistribute the people's wealth back to the people. So let's just be real clear and real honest to the people of Alaska. When we adopt Section 20 and don't put that money in the permanent fund as we promised last year we would do, we are subtracting money from the people's own pocketbooks.
Representative Butterworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask your indulgence for a few minutes on this subject, since it's been one of my favorites ever since I've been here in the legislature. And on this subject, I want to make it perfectly clear to the people of Alaska that we are not talking about the 25% constitutional mandate that went into the permanent fund as mandated by the citizens of this state. We're not talking about raiding the permanent fund of the $3 billion that are already there. And I would remind the public that that $3 billion at 12% interest will return to the citizens of Alaska $1,000 per person every year, this year and from now on, when the legislature decides whether or not they want to do that. That money is there. That money is sacred. It sounds good to those people who want to lock that money up so that the state can't grow, so that it can't develop the resources it so sorely needs to maintain the jobs and so forth of the people of this state. But the other side of the picture is our permanent fund is intact. The 25% mandated is not touchable by the legislature. These funds are merely those dollars that some people in this legislature wanted to put away last year that have not as yet been put into the permanent fund. If, yes, a new governor wants to go in a new direction, if a new legislature wants to go in a new direction, they have that option. If the people are so incensed about using these funds to maintain a level economy in this state, they will let us know at the polls next fall. That option is open to them also. And so let's not forget really what we're doing here and where we're going and why. This is to maintain a good, solid level of funding for this state, very comparable and comparable to last year's. That's what some of us who've been on the Finance Committee believe and know for sure that we have done with the budget, is to level out that spending. We're not interested in creating a slump in the economy because things are slow right now. We want to maintain that economy, and that's what we have done and are doing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I believe that I don't have those 1981 session laws with me, but if my memory serves correctly, I believe that the representative from Juneau that spoke so strongly was at least technically in error. I'm not trying to attack his philosophical approach, perhaps, but I don't think it is correct that this is a deletion of the permanent fund. I think what the language that is being amended is the language that is not the appropriation itself, but the language that said how fast the appropriation should go into the permanent fund would allow the language to allow the appropriation to maintain itself as an ongoing appropriation that does not lapse, and therefore it would be put into the permanent fund whenever there are surplus revenues in any one month. They could put some of that into the permanent fund. We don't really know what our revenues are going to be. That's one of the difficult things about appropriating these days. A month ago we had a hearing, and everybody there except for maybe one or two of the experts said world oil prices were going down the drain, and they were talking about $7 per barrel for the price of Alaskan oil. Well, at that time it was $27, about $26.50 or so at the refinery. Well, now it's $30, so it went up. That's just the kind of thing that happens around here. And one of the guys that was the most hawkish, telling us that our revenues were taking a dive, now sent us a letter and said, "Gee, I just went to a great meeting in Mexico, financed by Pemex, that had all the experts from around the world, including OPEC experts there, and they convinced him that he was slightly wrong, and that his scenario would probably happen in terms of the revenues taking a dive, but it wouldn't happen at least until January, and maybe not the whole next fiscal year." So, and I'm not quoting him as if he knows what he's talking about, because again, it's such a difficult thing to judge that maybe next week he'll send us a different letter, you know. So it's very difficult to know, you know, what our revenue situation is like. But at least there's going to be these surpluses, and then, you know, good times and bad times. And we have reduced the total appropriations down from what they were at least being considered at the beginning of this session, and of course down to 50% of what they were last year and the year before. But the question of whether or not we're going to be in deficit or we're going to be in surplus is a difficult one. What this amendment allows for is that if this fiscal year we're in surplus, which now looks to be the case, then this money is going to go into the permanent fund. If we're not this year, then maybe some portion of it will go in the permanent fund, and it will have to wait for another year or year and a half or some period of time before it would be totally made up. That's the point of the amendment. Again, this isn't the 25% that constitutionally goes into the permanent fund, regardless of what the legislature does. We can't repeal those appropriations. We can't in any way obtain that money to spend. That's what the public voted on, was the 25%. We're not touching that. This is just something that the legislature did, and it was done at a time when we thought we had literally billions and billions of surplus money. So I think it makes sense to take another look at that. But from a technical point of view, this is not going to reduce anybody's permanent fund dividend check. As a matter of fact, the law that was quoted that says that a portion of the permanent fund earnings go out as permanent fund dividends is not technically correct either, because we're appropriating general fund money out of the general fund, which is commingled like all others from all other sources. And it, you know, you could just as easily say it was coming from oil taxes or from corporate taxes or from any other place, even fish taxes. It's $150 million, and it's being appropriated out of the general fund. We haven't established the undistributed account that is being proposed, that in the future perhaps the money may come out of this undistributed perm fund earnings account. We don't have that established currently, so it is not correct that some amount of perm fund earnings is designated, although it is in some people's minds, you know, associated with it, but it's not technically correct. And the more money we would take out of the general fund and put into the permanent fund itself would reduce by 90%, assuming they make about 10 or 12%, or reduce by 88% that available for dividends, because only the earnings could be used for dividends. And under the current situation, you know, we can utilize you know, whatever portion we wanted to, we could give out in dividends.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, a couple points. I disagree with the analysis that the last speaker came up with. If we do have, as an example, $3 billion in the permanent fund, and even if it only makes a 10% return, well, then half of that return would be $150 million, which is what is proposed for distribution this year under at least one of the schemes that I've seen. The point is that the constitutional amendment allows the legislature to designate by law what the income of the permanent fund should be used for. And there have been a lot of discussions about those earnings. Some people suggest we should put half of the earnings back into the fund in order to protect it against inflation. That's a piece of legislation that this body hasn't addressed yet this year. I think it's very important that we at some point do address it. But the Constitution does allow the legislature to designate the disposition of that income, so we can say that it shall go into dividends. The previous speaker from Fairbanks talked about whether this money is in the permanent fund. Well, it almost made it to the permanent fund. Once it gets there, the legislature can't spend it, but we're stopping it right at that final minute and saying, oh no, we're going to spend it, it's not going to go into the permanent fund. If it would have made it into the fund, we certainly could not have spent it, but this is money that that it's $1 billion that we're making a decision on here right now. Instead of going to the permanent fund, we're going to spend it. Now that's going to balance the budget this year. It's going to keep the economy of Alaska stable. And that wasn't, they aren't my words, that's the words of the representative from Fairbanks who admits that much of Alaska's economy is based on government spending. But what are we going to do next year? There isn't going to be $1 billion that we can rip off next year to maintain our huge appetite. So I think you may be able to escape this year with a artificially balanced budget, but you're leaving next year's legislature in a lurch.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, maybe if we put this on the terms of a family by comparison, we might see what's really happening here. Imagine a household and a family where a fella occasionally has a great amount of income and a small amount of income. Maybe he's a professional musician and that's the way things go. He's got a wife and a few kids, and because of the concerns of his friends and his wife, he set up a trust fund to protect his children. Well, he has a pretty bad spending history, in that whenever he has a whole bunch of money, he goes out and spends it immediately on new projects, new toys, new hobbies, rather than spending it on the education for his children or appropriate practical needs. So that's the reason the trust fund was set up. This profligate is now saying, well, I promised you I was going to put this money in the trust fund. I was really going to do it. I'll just put it in a little later. You just trust me. In the meantime, I'm going to go out and have an orgy. That's what's really happening here.
Representative Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to point out a couple of things I think have been said in error. For one thing, the appropriation was based on projected revenues which never materialized. The second thing, it's the administration that stopped the deposits of the permanent fund. They stopped them in December when the legislature wasn't even in session and haven't made any since then. It's the same administration that's now advocating slower deposits than this language provides. And finally, those that are attacking the repeal of this language are the same people who are attacking the addition of this language when it was added in 297 last year. We're going back to the original language that was passed by the prior majority when House Bill 1 passed this House and was adopted by the legislature.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think the majority leader made one mistake there. The $1.8 billion and the people who supported that was based on a projection of what we would spend also. And he may remember that the a minority offered on this floor at the budget time, at the when the budget was offered, an alternative spending plan for the state that was $600 million lower than the plan that was offered by the Republican leadership of your coalition and was adopted by this body. And if that $600 million had not been appropriated and spent, there would be $600 million sitting in the Treasury that could go into the permanent fund as provided here and would have met the goals of the statute here that said $1.4 billion would be in by July 1st. So while he may think that the 1.8 was based on a certain revenue projection, it was also based on a spending projection. And this fact is that we appropriated knowingly $600 million more than our fiscal analyst told us was available, and if we hadn't done that, we'd have $600 million that could go into the permanent fund.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The discussion is always very helpful and sometimes quite revealing. I recall that when we had the original budget that we passed over to the other body on this floor, that it was $1,595,000,000 thereabout. And at that time, there was some $70 million worth of amendments offered on this floor to that budget. It was a budget that this coalition caucus, Mr. Speaker, had worked for many months to establish. There had been many, many public hearings held on every